Red Letter N unfolds into a spectrum of colors.
A monumental backlit letter M floats like a planet in dark space. The word Miramax appears with translucent letters etched in pale blue, a BN Media Group company. A caption appears. Netflix presents a Miramax film. A Half Passport Will Travel production. Middle-aged woman lies on her back, staring blankly, her head turned to one side. On a wall above her, a wooden crucifix. A shelf is crowded with morning and evening medication. A framed photo shows a smiling brown-haired teenager holding the neck of a cello in one hand and an award in the other. The same girl in her early 20s sits on an armchair in jeans and a casual top, gazing across at the woman in the bed. Two women are whispering in a narrow hallway outside the bedroom. A flashback of the girl as a young teenager running.
Can she ever really perform again? It's been a decade.
And what else is she going to do?
I don't know. I don't think she even knows.
In another flashback, the teenager carrying a cello case down a paneled staircase passes a younger girl who is carrying a cello case up the stairs. With a mournful look, the teenager eyes the crinkled, frizzy-haired girl who gives her a shy smile as she proceeds up the stairs. The adult brunette sits motionless in the armchair, gazing at the inert woman in the bed. In flashback, the young woman is the teenager whose scream was heard, sitting in exactly the same position. The title in black letters over a pale background. The Perfection. The second E in the word inverting. In ochre-yellow letters on a black background. 1. Mission.
Anton. Paloma. It's Charlotte Wilmore. Anton. Paloma. Anton. Paloma. It's Charlotte Wilmore. Yes, it's me. Hi.
A plane lands.
Anton. Paloma. Hi. It's Charlotte Wilmore. I don't know where you are in the world, scouting young cellists somewhere exotic, I'm sure. Anyway, I know it's been forever, but my mother finally passed away and I'm not needed here anymore. So if it's okay, I'd like to come and join you.
Her brown hair untidily grazing the collar of her denim jacket, Charlotte is walking down a crowded downtown street in the high-rise metropolis of Shanghai. She is wearing earbuds. Her pale, sculpted face stiffens as she raises her eyes and stops walking. On the wall of a hotel, she sees a large poster advertising a cello concert to be given by crinkly-haired beauty Elizabeth Wells, looking sidelong at the camera with a pink-lipped pout, her flawless, honey-colored skin shown to advantage in a black halter-neck dress. Charlotte's light blue eyes gaze steadily at the image. She blinks and walks on. Behind the glamour of the pose, a look of vulnerability shines through Elizabeth Wells' almond-shaped eyes. Charlotte comes down a yellow-walled corridor dressed in a dark green cheongsam with white piping and turquoise detailing that show off her tall, slim figure. Her hair is tied back with two loose strands on either side of her face, her hands clasped in front of her, carrying a clutch bag. She runs one hand across her waist as she steps into a crowded reception area.
Charlotte.
She turns to suave-looking Anton, standing with his glamorous brunette wife, Paloma, who has her arms draped around him. Charlotte's face lights up with a smile. The couple come over to her, arm in arm. She steps towards them and puts her arms around both of them, her eyes closing with intense emotion.
Paloma and I are so sorry about your mother.
An aerial view of the performance space.
After a five-month search over three continents, we are thrilled to bring our remarkable finalists together in Shanghai for one last concert. The Backoff Academy in Boston, founded by my grandfather Emil in 1927, is quite frankly the premier private music facility for young cellists in the world. And each year, we teach hundreds of day students in Massachusetts, but only a select handful are given the opportunity, privilege, really, to reside and study at the Academy, which is why I'm so excited that the winner tonight will receive a 4-year live-in scholarship to back off.
Three preteen female cellists smile excitedly, and Charlotte joins in the applause.
Now, the fact that my most prized protege, Elizabeth Wells, one of the best young cellists on the planet, will be judging tonight's final concert is testament to just how talented these three young ladies are. Listening to Lizzie play music so pure, so perfect, is as close to God as you can get. Well, it's as close to God as I want to get for the time being. But Lizzie's not the only surprise we have for you this evening. For 4 glorious years, I trained Charlotte Wilmore at Backoff. Charlotte was a rare and gifted talent, poised for the type of greatness achieved by very few. But then, as all of you know, Charlotte's beloved mother, Ruth, got sick. Charlotte put her career on hold, went back home to care for her mother. This is the heart of Charlotte.
Charlotte drops her gaze, sitting in a bathtub with lit candles all around her like a shrine. She cuts her wrist. Her head is shaved, ankles secured, a mouth guard pushed between her teeth, a wire attached to her bald head.
I was thrilled that Charlotte reached out to Paloma and myself. Thrilled that after nearly a decade, she's back in our lives. Ladies and gentlemen, our second judge for this evening, Charlotte Wilmore.
Lizzie applauds politely. As the assembled guests applaud, Charlotte's face lights up with a smile. Shanghai's smog-filled skyline. Inside, Charlotte walks across the bustling concourse.
It's Baijiu, Chinese vodka. 2 shots will have you fluent in Mandarin.
Charlotte! Good, I was looking for you. You must remember these 2 grueling taskmasters from the Academy.
Oh, my goodness. It's so wonderful to see you.
Theus and Jeffrey.
And after all these years...
Anton.
Charlotte, there you are. Would you excuse us? Just want to introduce you before we have to go upstairs and start. She is so excited to meet you.
He ushers Charlotte over to Elizabeth Webb.
And here she is, Charlotte, my star.
Elizabeth Wells, of course. Lizzie, please.
Hey. Your music, Lizzie, it's something more than beautiful.
Lizzie eyes her up.
I mean, I'm sorry. Am I the luckiest man in the world? I don't even drink, and I feel giddy drunk. My 2 most perfect students together. Oh, my goodness, all right, gotta get this thing started.
I'm such a big fan. I know that sounds ridiculous, but I've downloaded all of your music, and that New York Times Magazine profile last month of you, those photos of you were amazing, and the way...
I was 9 when I first saw you perform. You were 14 and everything I wanted to be. My idol. Please don't be nervous around me, Charlotte. I'm just so happy to finally meet you.
Charlotte smiles appreciatively. Now the 3 young cellists perform. 3 long red banners are draped from the roof of a vast auditorium to the main level where the judges and entourage occupy the first few rows. Lizzie and Charlotte sitting side by side, Lizzie looking solemn, Charlotte smiling appreciatively. Anton plucks the air with his fingers. Lizzie, who wears a delicate nose ring, leans into Charlotte.
Wanna know a secret? The girl on the left is going to win. She's brilliant. Leaves the other 2 in the dust.
I agree, but that kind of takes the drama out of it, doesn't it?
Lizzie smirks.
You want drama? Watch that other girl's mother in the blue dress.
They both look sideways towards a group of parents.
And the guy in the gray slacks, he's the father of the girl in the middle. There's something going on between them. They can't help themselves. And right in front of their spouses. Just watch.
The man in gray glances sideways.
I first noticed during semifinals. It's kind of hilarious. Just watch.
Charlotte raises her soulful cat-like eyes and sees the woman leave her place, sidle towards her husband, who makes room for her between him and the other man. As they stand side by side, she takes hold of the man's hand. As the woman's fingers lightly scratch the man's hand, Charlotte's lips part with excitement. The demure-faced 40-year-old woman moves her hand across the man's thigh toward his crotch, and her shiny red lips purse. A slow, pleasurable smile spreads across his face. Covering her mouth with her hand. Outside the hall, in an intermission, Lizzie is standing with her back turned, gazing at that magnificent skyline of Pudong across the Huangpu River as Charlotte comes out to find her. She notices a quaver tattooed on Lizzie's back. Lizzie turns to face her as if she had sensed her presence, and Charlotte smiles.
We've actually met once before.
We have?
It was the day you were leaving Bekhov. Your mom had just had her stroke, and you had all your bags packed, and I was just entering, and I was nervous and excited, and I saw you. My hero.
A flashback to the paneled staircase at the Bekhov Academy and Lizzie and Charlotte passing each other on the landing. Nine-year-old Lizzie carries her cello case in both arms as she walks up the stairs. Charlotte laughs dismissively.
That was a long time ago.
Do you ever play anymore?
It took me a while after I left Bekhov, years to be honest, but now I love it.
Because you're playing for yourself.
Exactly. All that time with Anton, the practice, the performances, the pressure to be perfect, it was...
I know.
Do you ever think about leaving?
Bekhov? It's my family. I can never...
Never.
No, never. And anyway, the work, this special work, it's what's expected of us.
I don't miss hearing that.
Well, you'll be happy to know I'm giving myself a little vacation. First one in forever, starting tomorrow.
Amazing.
I know. I know, I can actually sleep in, not dream about notes or scales, rest my hands, cause a little trouble, have more than one drink in an evening.
The baijiu is delicious.
That is what I've heard. I'd better catch up.
She reaches for Charlotte's glass and drains it, her eyes fixed on Charlotte, who breaks her gaze with a good-natured smile. Then they go downstairs.
I have a bruise on my chin.
In the foyer, a man drops a champagne flute. He staggers backwards, seeing blood pouring from his nose. The Chinese man sways on his heels. He vomits yellow bile. He drops to one knee. The two girls stand motionless on the stairs as people help the man up.
Was it something he ate?
God, I hope it isn't like what's happening down south.
What's happening down south?
Three guests look up at Lizzie.
Some sort of hemorrhagic fever near the Hunan border. Passed in the air, real contagion-like stuff.
The girls walk on.
We were just scouting in Hunan.
No, it can't be that.
I sure hope not. You know how Anton likes to find his proteges in remote places? Hunan, Cambodia.
Minnesota.
Tampa. Will you go dancing with me later?
Yes.
Lizzie strokes Charlotte's cheek.
Good.
Lizzie, there you are. Anton is asking for you. Come.
Lizzie turns to follow Paloma and Charlotte both back to the stage.
Elizabeth. Elizabeth. I was just telling Jeffrey and Theus that I was hoping that we could convince you to play one short piece, please.
Only if you can convince Charlotte to play second cello with me.
My goodness, yes.
No.
Please. Yes. No. We must.
No, Lizzie, I couldn't.
Perfect, please. Please, yes, make it happen. My goodness.
Cello duet number 3?
Oh, yes, perfect.
I know you still know it.
It's a dream come true.
Lizzie, I'm an amateur now. You have been and always will be the person who makes my heart skip a beat when you play.
Charlotte gives in to Lizzie's gaze.
Ladies and gentlemen, we're all about to witness something extraordinary.
The two women bow and sit down with their cellos, Lizzie's a deep toffee color, Charlotte's a rich honey color. Lizzie gives Charlotte an encouraging look. Lizzie grabs Charlotte by the hand and they run excitedly out of the hall. During the performance, they exchange smiles. Afterwards, they run down into a dark basement and face each other, their hands on each other's shoulders. They kiss on the mouth. Their kiss runs deep with increasing passion. They dance in a club. They slow dance, their lips searching each other. In the dance venue, Lizzie caresses Charlotte's neck. Their lips together, they touch each other's arms in a hotel room. Lizzie caresses Charlotte's naked body, and the two women make love. Pleasure, Charlotte. Anton and the audience applaud rapturously. A slow aerial view of Pudong with its tall towers and the Oriental Pearl Tower suffused in pink and purple neon. In their hotel bedroom, the two girls gaze at each other.
I've never been with anyone before.
No one, ever.
My mom got sick. I went home. So everything else just
got put on hold.
So I'm your first.
First and best.
Lizzie lightly plants kisses on Charlotte's shoulder and gets out of bed, slipping on a silk robe. Charlotte watches her with girlish fascination.
I'm traveling out west tomorrow. Come with me.
Really?
Yeah. I'm doing it rough and tumble. Small buses, weird towns, as far away from first class as I can get. Unplug from everything and everyone.
She gets a bottle and two glasses.
I think we could have fun together.
I think we could too.
She hands Charlotte a glass and pours her a drink.
I've never met anyone like you before. I mean, we're so different.
And yet, we're more alike than it may seem.
Charlotte has a quaver tattooed on her right shoulder. Grinning happily, they go on talking. Part 2, Detour. Trams sluggishly make their way along a street packed tightly with pedestrians. In a back street, a little girl in a pink anorak jumps up and down. In a narrow back alley, workmen in orange overalls dig a trench. Lizzie, asleep in bed, comes into sharp focus as she stirs.
Good morning.
Her full lips widen into a smile and she turns to look at Charlotte, who is sitting up.
Good morning, you.
Lizzie kisses her arm.
Are you as hungover as I am?
Pretty much, yeah.
I'm out of practice on the binge drinking. That Chinese vodka is brutal.
Do you want some ibuprofen?
Please, God, yes. My head is throbbing. I need like 50 of them.
The pharmacy is open for business.
Charlotte holds up two miniature bottles of vodka and some pills.
What is that? Hair of the dog?
It's the best cure. We're on vacation, right?
The girls walk down the center of a street carrying backpacks.
You really don't speak any Mandarin. Like, not even ni hao.
I can say ni hao, but what you just did, buying bus tickets, I mean, that would have taken me 3 hours and lots of manic hand gestures and then desperate crying and then probably we would have ended up in South Korea.
Or you could have just used a bus and a ticket emoji. It's the same thing.
Okay, well, that is an excellent point.
Are you sure you're okay?
You look like you're struggling.
Honestly, I feel like shit.
Okay, well, are you sure you want to do this? We could just go back to the hotel for the day and order pay-per-view and you could get your head right.
No, I only have 2 weeks. I don't want to waste any of it.
Play through the pain.
Play through the pain.
Don't you want to get some food before we leave? It might help.
Okay.
Charlotte sets off with Lizzie traipsing behind her. A chicken is cut up at a street stall. Lizzie lifts a spoonful of gloopy food and lets it drop back into her bowl. Charlotte, weaving between the small tables at the food stall, sees Lizzie hunched over her plate.
Worst idea in history.
All I need is for my stomach to go haywire on that bus.
Should we just get the check and pretend this never happened?
This is your moment. You can bow out gracefully and I'll never hold it against you.
Just go to the airport like we never met?
Exactly.
Lizzie. I have no idea who you're talking about.
Don't make me laugh.
The girls line up to board a provincial bus.
Are you sure you want to do this?
I'm fine. I just need to sit down.
They climb aboard. Lizzie makes her way along the bus, trying not to heave.
Oh, God. What?
Nothing.
What?
There was a bug.
Jesus.
Yeah, this bus hasn't been cleaned since maybe ever.
Well, I told you it was gonna be
rough and tumble. You weren't kidding.
Oh, it's like a fire in my head. It's so crazy.
Do you want some water?
Yeah. Here you go.
Lizzie gulps it down. Charlotte watches Lizzie drink down the whole bottle.
Oh, fuck. It's like my mouth has never been so fucking dry. I need another ibuprofen. Okay. I'll be better after a few of these, I swear. Thank you.
No. That's too many. Is that a good idea on an empty stomach?
She gulps down 4 tablets, washing it down with another bottle of water.
That's good. I'll be good.
Lizzie rests her head against the seat back. The bus reverses out of its parking place. They set off from the Shanghai quayside lined with container trucks. The bus sets off along a tarmacked road, cutting across snow-covered terrain. The road starts to climb with a snowy bank on one side. Lizzie, with her head leaning on the bus window, is asleep. Next to her, Charlotte is wearing her earbuds. She notices a little girl leaning over the back of her seat, cuddling a turquoise whale, and looks at her with interest. Charlotte smiles at her and gives her a little wave. The little girl's face creases into a smile, and she waves back. She curls her tongue, and Charlotte gives her a bright smile. Lizzie's eyes flicker open. Charlotte lowers her long, slender fingers from her eyes, putting on a look of surprise for the little girl's benefit. The child does the same. Charlotte crosses her eyes, and the child's mother tells the girl to sit down.
Charlotte. I need to use a bathroom. My stomach is a mess. My head is even worse. I don't know what's going on. I just need to use the bathroom.
Charlotte looks out of the back window.
We're in the middle of nowhere.
I just need to use the bathroom. You have to ask the bus driver to stop.
Yeah, but I don't...
Please, Charlotte, I'm going to be sick. Please just do it. I feel like my stomach is going to explode. Okay. Excuse me? Can anyone help me? My friend is sick. Does anyone speak English, please? Sir, excuse me. My friend is sick. Can you please stop the bus? Sir, can you stop the bus so she can go to the bathroom? Sir, can you please stop the bus? Excuse me, can anyone help me?
Is she sick?
Yes, she's very sick. We need a bathroom.
Lizzie staggers out of her seat.
You okay?
Lizzie throws up. She covers her mouth in shock.
It's okay.
Feel good.
Lizzie, we're gonna stop, I promise. Stop! You have to pull over! I know you don't. We're gonna stop. Okay, we're gonna stop. Sir, stop the fucking bus!
I know, honey.
I know. Hey, pull over the fucking bus!
Do it!
The driver slams on the brake.
Okay. Here you go. Come on. He stopped. Come on.
I can't move. If I move, I'll shit.
You can do it. Tiny steps. Move. Deep breath.
My stomach is ripping apart.
Come on,
you can
do this.
It hurts so bad.
I know. You can do it. Come on.
I can't
so
hold
close.
It. I can't hold it.
You can make it.
Oh, fuck. I'm going to show the bus, Charlotte.
A few more steps. You're so
it.
Close.
Please, Charlotte, I can't hold it.
Come
I can't hold it. I'm going to shit.
You can do it.
I'm going to shit.
You can do this.
Lizzie squats by the side of the road.
I'm dying.
It's okay.
No, I'm dying.
It's okay.
I'm scared, Charlotte.
It's okay.
This is not normal.
More yellow vomit.
What is happening? What is happening to me?
I don't know.
What is happening to me?
I don't know. You're sick. You're sick, and you're going to feel better because it's out of your system now, and it's going to be okay.
You have no idea the pain. It just hurts so badly.
我在边有点不给你.
Thank you.
An old lady hands Charlotte a cloth. Charlotte kneels in front of Lizzie.
You're okay. 我的车很臭的,你知道吗?
The driver pours water onto the floor of his bus.
I'm so sorry.
It's okay. I took care of my mom for years. I can handle this.
臭婊子,回我的车!
She is sick! You son of a bitch! Can't you see that she's sick? She's fucking sick!
Badass. Oh, you ain't seen nothing yet.
Charlotte, standing a head taller than Lizzie, wraps her in her arms. The young man who intervened slides back into his seat, and everyone watches Lizzie get back on.
I'm sorry. I'm so sorry. I'm sorry. I'm so sorry.
The young woman hands Lizzie a face mask.
Take it, so they're not freaked out. Not because you need it.
The driver waits for her to sit and starts the engine. Charlotte places the paper mask over Lizzie's nose and mouth.
Okay. Here you go.
So thirsty.
Yeah, you're dehydrated. Water? Does anyone have any water? Water? Anyone? Water? Oh.
A man in a woolly hat hands her a bottle of water.
Okay.
Lizzie gulps the water down.
We have to get you to a doctor.
We have to get her to a hospital. Hospital. Is there one on the way?
I don't think so. Not until Tongli. Not a hospital, at least.
Can we call someone? Shit.
Sure.
There's no service.
Charlotte.
Yeah.
You have to help me. It's gonna be okay.
I know.
I really don't feel good. My head, the pain is killing me. It hurts so bad. It feels like my brain is on fire and it hurts. I don't know what's happening to me.
Just try to close your eyes, baby.
No, I don't know what. It won't stop. It won't stop. I just need you to help me make it stop.
Okay, we're gonna play a game. I need you to close your eyes. Hey. Close your eyes. Breathe. We are gonna list as many composers as we can in alphabetical order.
Please help.
Lizzie?
Hurts.
Okay.
Hurts.
Ready? I'll start. Adams. Come on. Give me a B. Concentrate on that instead of a pain.
Beethoven.
Chopin. Come on. You can do this.
Dvorak.
As Lizzie's breathing calms, Charlotte watches her intently. Lizzie's eyes suddenly widen and she leaps up.
Oh God, I'm gonna puke.
What?
Oh God, please.
She struggles to open the window. Passengers wince at the cascade of yellow bile on the window.
Oh God. Are those bugs? Are those fucking bugs?
The vomit is teeming with maggots. Lizzie looks up at Charlotte in dazed horror.
Charlotte. This isn't normal. This is fucking normal.
Oh, God.
What if that guy last night, what if he had that Ebola thing they were talking about? What if he had it, the one from Hunan? What if I caught it?
No,
what
you didn't catch
what
that.
What if I did?
You didn't.
What if I did? Look what's happening.
The maggots are oozing into the bus.
What if I did?
You didn't catch it. You didn't.
Oh, God, I'm gonna fucking die.
No.
I'm gonna fucking die.
Hey. Lizzie, you have to sit down.
God, I'm sick.
No, you're dehydrated.
I'm fucking sick. What if I'm fucking sick?
What if you're sick, too?
They said it was contagious. What if you have it, too?
I'm not sick.
Oh, God, what if you were?
I'm not sick. It's gonna be okay.
It's not. Stop saying it. It's not gonna
gonna be fucking okay! Stop saying it!
Lizzie starts scratching at her wrists.
What are you doing? What are you doing? Whoa, whoa, stop!
Nothing inside of me.
No, no, there's nothing inside of you.
Yes, there is.
You saw, there were fucking maggots in my puke. They're fucking inside of me. They're crawling in my skin. I can feel them.
No, there's not. There's nothing inside of you.
I can feel them. They're in my head. They won't get out. They won't get out. Make them get out. They're still making it without. Fuck, did I not? Oh, God, it's crawling in my skin. I can feel it. I can feel it. It's in my head. Make it stop. Pain. It hurts.
Get out! Get out! Get out!
What is he saying?
He says you have to get off.
Get off! We're in the middle of fucking nowhere! You can't kick us off this bus! We need a doctor! We need a fucking doctor! You have to help us find a doctor!
Lizzie slams her head against a window.
Lizzie, stop! What are you doing?
The bus continues on its way. Lizzie turns away from the window, tearing at her black frizzy hair. The burly driver smashes on the brakes and strides towards the girls at the back of the bus, hurling abuses at them. He pushes Charlotte to one side and drags Lizzie by her hair to the front of the bus and down the steps. The young man talks to Charlotte.
Look, we'll get help for you when we reach Tongli.
I need it now.
That way is a small town. They'll have a pharmacy, a doctor maybe. Stop walking there.
Fuck you. You okay?
A woman passes down two more bottles of water.
Thank you.
The driver throws out their bags.
Hey! We're in the middle of nowhere! What are you doing? No! 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 Fuck you! Please go back! Wait! Wait!
They are left standing on a deserted winding road in a mountainous terrain. Sunlight crests a craggy hill. Holding Lizzie by the shoulders, Charlotte helps her along the dirt road alongside a small reservoir.
Here we go. Almost there. Just keep going.
Lizzie puts a water bottle to her mouth, but it's empty.
I'm burning up. You're fucking inside of me. Fucking crawling inside of me. What's happening?
It's gonna be okay, Lizzie.
Oh, it's not. It's not gonna be okay, Charlotte. You need to leave me.
I'm not gonna leave you, Lizzie.
Charlotte, listen to me. Something is wrong. Something is wrong with me.
Lizzie, I know. That's why we need to get you help.
No, but I'm dying. Don't you understand?
No, I don't understand
but
that.
But I am. I'm dying. I'm dying. Oh, it's inside of me. It's fucking inside of me.
Charlotte watches Lizzie bending over in torment. Lizzie looks down at her arm and sees movement beneath the skin.
Charlotte. Charlotte. What's happening?
Charlotte's eyes widen in horror as she edges towards Lizzie's outstretched arm.
What's happening? Oh my God. Your arm! There's something crawling inside of it. What is it?
I don't know.
What's happening?
I don't fucking know.
They're fucking alive. Things are fucking alive at me. It's bugs. They're fucking bugs. Bugs.
What the fuck?
Bugs break the skin and Lizzie vomits up yellow liquid teeming with bugs.
What the fuck is inside of you?
The bugs are swarming in her hand.
They're in your hand. You have to get them out, Lizzie. Lizzie, you have to stop it. It's inside of you. You have to stop it. Fuck, it's inside of you.
Help me. Help me. Help me, Charlotte.
You know what you have to do.
Charlotte produces a meat cleaver and Lizzie grabs it. She kneels down by a rock, lays down her hand, and swings the cleaver. Darkness. and the story rewinds.
You know what you have to do?
To the moment when Lizzie is asleep in bed and Charlotte is sitting up next to her, staring intently at the tattooed quaver on Lizzie's back.
Good morning.
Good morning, you.
Lizzie kisses Charlotte's arm.
Are you as hungover as I am?
Pretty much, yeah.
I'm out of practice on the binge drinking. That Chinese vodka is brutal.
Do you want some ibuprofen?
Charlotte looks at a tube of her mother's daily pills, which may cause itching, nausea, and hallucinations, and that alcohol can increase the side effects. She looks at her steely reflection in the mirror.
Pharmacy is open for business.
What is that? Hair of the dog?
It's the best cure. We're on vacation, right?
Charlotte holds up two miniature bottles of vodka. At a food stall, Charlotte watches Lizzie sitting forlornly at a table with a spoonful of gloopy food. Next to the man hacking at a chicken, Charlotte notices his rack of tools and her eyes stiffen. In the bus, she swipes the back of Lizzie's jacket.
Oh, God. What?
Nothing.
What?
There was a bug.
I need another ibuprofen.
Okay.
Charlotte opens the tube of pills and Lizzie knocks them back while Charlotte watches. As the bus drives on along a woodland road and Lizzie is dozing, Charlotte reads about improvising a tourniquet on her cell phone. She looks up from the screen and sees the little girl watching her.
We have to get her to a hospital now.
Maybe we can call someone.
Shit. There's no service.
There is service.
Oh God, I'm getting
cute. Are those... Are those bugs? Are those fucking bugs?
There are no bugs in Lizzie's vomit.
What's happening?
Oh my God.
Your arm. There's something crawling inside of it. It's bugs! Bugs!
There are no bugs in her hand or in her vomit.
What the fuck?
They're in your hand. They're all in your hand. You know what you have to do.
Charlotte produces the cleaver. Lizzie grabs it. As she goes to kneel by a rock, Charlotte takes a breath and calmly nods her head. The shadow of a smile flits across Charlotte's mouth. Blackout. A road bridge over a frozen river leading to a North American metropolis. A caption appears. 3 weeks later, Boston. Violin is displayed on a mantelpiece. The portrait of a somber-looking man hangs on a wall. Another violin leans against a stained glass window. The photo of a young girl posing with her cello and more black and white photos of young female cellists. The facade of a mock Tudor gabled property, roof dusted with snow neath a pale blue sky. Engraved on the gatepost of the property is the Bachoff Academy of Music, established in 1927. Part 3, Home. A black and white photograph of the Bachoff Academy, dated 1927, is displayed in the comfortably furnished house.
I know it's a very long way from China, but we are just so thrilled to have Zheng Li come live with us and study cello.
The tour is for Esmus Paloma. It's every dream I ever had for her.
We will take the very best care of her, as if she was our own daughter. Now, Zheng Li, are you ready to go down and see the chapel?
Yes.
The day students you study with are unlikely to ever see this.
Spectacular, isn't it? Converted from a chapel nearly 100 years ago. Based on the Musikverein in Vienna. Zheng Li, come here. Come up here. Come on, come. Right, now stand right here. Right here, and I want you to sing a note, A sharp. Sing. Doesn't that sound incredible?
Zheng Li's mother trembles with emotion.
I believe this to be the most acoustically perfect room I've ever been in.
It is.
It's beautiful.
And very few students are invited to play here. It takes years and years of intense practice. But the best, the very best, Lizzie, for example, Charlotte Wilmore before her. If you are as exceptional as they are and Zhang Li, I believe you may be, well then you can have the chance to perform here. And then you can have the chance for greatness.
Zhang Li nods. Outside, her mother waves to Paloma, Anton, and her daughter and gets into a cab. She gives a last wave as Paloma and Anton place hands on Zhang Li's shoulders and they watch the cab drive off. It's evening at the academy. A light at the bottom of the staircase comes on and Anton, tying the belt of his dressing gown, comes downstairs. He presses an intercom button.
Hello? Hello? Who is it?
He comes down the snow-covered drive.
Who is it, please? Hello?
He can see a figure standing outside the gate.
Who is it?
He watches Lizzie step into the light on the other side of the barred gate.
Oh, my God. Where have you been? What's happened to you? We've been looking for you.
He notices her hand.
Elizabeth?
He sees the bandaged stump.
What happened to your hand?
She looks up at him forlornly.
What the hell happened to your aunt?
She explains to Paloma and Anton.
They found me on the side of a mountain. Drugged out of my mind. Covered in blood. With nothing but a homemade tourniquet keeping me alive. The police tried to help me, but I'm the one who took the pills. I'm the one who chopped my own hand off. Once I woke up in the hospital and once the drugs were out of my system and I could think clearly again, Charlotte was already out of the country.
I still can't understand why. Why would she do this?
Because she's a jealous fucking bitch. I had music, fame, you. And she couldn't stand that. She couldn't stand that I replaced her. She tracked me down to China, befriended me, slept with me, poisoned me, all that because I had the life that she so desperately wanted.
God.
And now it's gone. It is completely gone.
Elizabeth, it's going to be okay.
She took everything from me. Everything.
The shut wrought iron gates of the academy property. In her room, Lizzie sits on her bed, remembering. She looks at the stump at the end of her right arm, tears rolling down her face. Her screams reverberating across the barren Chinese landscape. She comes downstairs with her right arm in a sling. She enters the music room where the young players are being taught by Anton and his colleagues, Teus and Jeffrey.
Yes. Good. Play through the pain. Good.
Anton catches her eye across the room and she smiles softly. He turns his attention back to Zhang Li and she blinks back her disappointment.
Actually, Elizabeth, when practice is over, do you have a minute to talk?
Later, she is with Paloma and Anton.
I don't understand. You're kicking me out? I have nowhere to go.
We found you a place. By the museum, right next to Central Avenue T Station.
We'll pay for it. Pay for all of it. Pay for your rehabilitation.
But I can still be useful, Anton. I can teach. Music is my life.
Look at us. You know what this is? How we work here. We have Theus and Jeffrey. We don't need any more teachers.
But I can conduct, then I can compose. Fuck, I'll scrub the toilets. Just don't shut me out. Please. Anton, if you accept me, the music world will accept me. Don't you understand that? You have that power. You have that reputation. Your word means so much. But if you shut me out, please. Please. Don't be this person. Do not discard me.
Lizzie, this is a music conservatory, not a convalescent home.
Lizzie stares in shock at Paloma's cold demeanor.
I'm sorry. I didn't mean it like that, but there are other girls that we need to house and train.
Anton. Please.
Anton stands with his back to her.
I don't know anything else.
You had a gift. A rare and beautiful talent like no other. But sadly, that gift is gone. I'm so sorry, Elizabeth.
He pats her on the shoulder as he leaves the room. Paloma does the same as she sweeps out after him. Lizzie, wearing a tracksuit and trainers, steps out of the room and looks around the elegantly furnished paneled hallway. She walks past framed black and white photographs of previous alumni displayed on the wall. She comes to a side table of music trophies and above them mid-20th century photographs of Bachoff's female musicians posing with their stringed instruments. She arrives at a color photo of Anton with Charlotte. She smashes the photo with her left fist. The view spins as a look of sheer hatred infuses her eyes with an overwhelming desire for revenge. A caption appears, Minneapolis. In a suburban property, Charlotte is seen through her window carrying a chopping board across her kitchen. She slices a beefsteak tomato with a sharp knife. She looks up at a sound coming from outside. She puts down the knife and goes into the hall, peering through the frosted stained glass in the front door. Across the street, a car is parked outside of the garage of the house opposite, and a car drives past. Charlotte turns toward the squeaking sound coming from inside the house. She moves warily towards a dark corridor, switching on the light.
Hello?
Warily, her lips parted, her eyes staring as she walks slowly down the hallway towards the door at the end, next to a framed painting of a snowy landscape. She looks into an unlit small bedroom and she sighs with relief. She turns off the light. Lizzie emerges from another room with a taser. Charlotte backs into a wall and locks herself out. With a dead look in her eyes, Lizzie kicks Charlotte ferociously in the gut.
Fucking crazy bitch! Fuck! Fuck!
Fuck you! Fuck! Bitch!
She places her boot on Charlotte's mouth. The neon-lit city of Boston at night. In his car, Anton is conducting in time with the music on his car radio. Next to him, Paloma smiles indulgently, then her smile freezes.
Anton.
Anton drives towards the gates of the property.
What's going on?
They see Lizzie standing in front of a parked car, its brake lights glowing red.
Anton.
Stay here.
Anton stops the car and gets out.
Lizzie, what are you doing here? You're gonna freeze to death. Look, I know this is hard, but I thought I made myself clear. You just can't be here.
Because I had nothing you wanted. Now I do.
What are you talking about? What do you have?
I have the bitch.
My God. Lizzie, what have you done? Where is she? Where is she?
In the trunk of my fucking car.
She opens the trunk and they both look down into it. Lizzie looks at Anton's shocked face.
So I can come home?
Charlotte sitting back on an armchair, her sweater filthy and her face bruised. She sits up suddenly and leans towards Anton.
Where is she?
She's with Paloma. But don't worry, she can't hurt you.
But she's crazy. She kidnapped me, Anton.
I know, she's not well, clearly. But frankly, neither are you. Were you really that jealous?
I wasn't jealous. I was trying to help her.
By cutting off her hand?
I saw her picture in a magazine. I saw the tattoo on her back. Same as mine. I knew how she got it. I knew what she had to do to get it. And I knew she was brainwashed just like I was until my mom got sick and I had to go home. I sat in that room with my mother for a decade, slowly going crazy. I blamed myself for everything. I spent years in and out of mental hospitals until finally, with some help, I saw the light. So I reached out and came back into your lives.
Gazing at her composed face, Anton looks puzzled.
Came back why? Came back why, Charlotte?
To help save her.
Save her from what?
From you.
His chortle dies away. His eyes darken and he fixes his gaze on Charlotte from behind his expensive-looking glasses. She calmly holds his staring gaze. In a flashback, he conducts with his hand as young Charlotte, her hair in a side ponytail, gnaws at the cello with her bow.
Very good. Back straight now. Tension in the strings. Feel it happening inside of you, Charlotte.
He comes up close.
Mm-hmm. Yes. Good.
He grips her bow arm. She lowers it.
I made a mistake.
Yes, you did.
I'm sorry.
After all this time.
Forgive me.
After all this training.
Forgive me, Anton.
After a promise for Carnegie Hall. Stop. Stop the crying. Stop the fucking crying!
It won't happen again.
In this room, it had better not.
Never in this room.
Because you know what happens next.
Yes, I do.
Do you?
Yes.
Teyas and Jeffrey come through a blue curtain into the lamp-lit paneled room.
We don't make mistakes here. Not when we represent the Academy.
The two bearded tutors sit down facing young Charlotte, and Anton steps behind her, his hand on her shoulder.
Whose name is on that gate?
Yours.
Yes. Mine, my father's, grandfather's. The school is my blood, my history. I teach you the way they taught me, the way they taught Theus and Jeffrey, and anyone who is fortunate enough to earn their place here. But I can only take you so far.
I will work harder.
Oh, you will work harder. And why do we work so hard, Charlotte?
To be the best.
And why is that, Charlotte?
Because it's what's expected of us.
Anton lets go of her shoulders and then gives her an approving pat on the arm.
You got that tattoo because you were ready to play in this chapel. You got that tattoo because you were the very best.
Yes, I know.
And if you're not the very best, if you insult me and Theus and Jeffrey with your mistakes?
I discredit the Academy.
Why?
Because I was prepared for the perfection and failed.
Prepared by our sweat, passion, and reputation.
Prepared by your sweat, passion, and reputation.
Month after month, year after year.
She sees a shaft of light under a door.
Month after month, year after year.
Until you were ready.
Until I was ready.
Flash to Charlotte running through the grassy grounds of the Academy, her long hair tumbling down her back. Now she stares at the shaft of light under the door. Flash to her running on towards a hedge at the perimeter of the property with the sun behind her.
You failed.
Anton, without his glasses, regards her ruefully.
So what does that mean? What does that mean, Charlotte? When you fail at the things that we teach you.
I cannot get close to God.
No, you cannot. And your talent will lay in waste, squandered by your lack of ambition. So what happens now?
No.
Yes, what happens now? What happened to me? What happened to Theus and Jeffrey? And every one of the chosen who failed.
We pay the price.
In soft focus and completely naked, Anton comes towards her.
You pay the price.
He drags adult Charlotte down the hall with a gag in her mouth, hands tied with rope and kicking out. He drags her along the floor down a shallow set of steps and down a steep staircase to the chapel, where Lizzie is standing nonchalantly by the bar. His arms gripping her, Anton pushes Charlotte into the room. She whacks him with her manacled hands, headbutts Lizzie, and tries to run for the stairs. Anton grabs her and punches her. The screen turns red. On the stage of the chapel, Charlotte sits in the seat where she sat as a young cellist, with a 1920s style opaque oval of dazzling light behind her. Her hair has been styled. She is wearing red lipstick that matches her floor-length strappy satin red dress. Her eyes are lowered. Anton, in a black tuxedo wearing his specs, looks at her admiringly. Nearby, Lizzie looks up with a knowing stare. Charlotte's black sequined stilettos are chained to the floor of the curved stage where she sits facing Anton and Lizzie. The quaver tattoo is shown next to the strap of her dress.
Tonight, Charlotte, after so many years, you shall play for us again.
I can't. I'm not ready.
Sonata for solo cello.
I'm not ready to play here, Anton. Please.
Well, Here is where you must play, where you've always played. Theus, Jeffrey.
The two men, also in black tie, come through the blue curtain.
And of course, Paloma.
Red-lipped Paloma sashays through the curtain.
Please, Paloma, you can stop this. Please.
We do what we need to do, Charlotte. It's what's expected of us.
She sits and takes hold of Anton's hand.
Paloma's always adored when you played perfectly. Well, we all did. That was always the goal, right, Charlotte? The perfection.
This doesn't have to be like this, Anton.
You really hate me, don't you? You hate me. When all I ever did was believe in you.
You know what you did to me.
And you know it helped you become the rare talent that you were.
I was a child. Lizzie was a child. We were children.
You were students who achieved greatness, just as my grandfather envisioned, just like my father taught me. Everybody should be so lucky. Lizzie, were you abused? Is that what you would call it, what we did for you?
Lizzie looks across at Charlotte.
To play that music, to achieve the perfection.
Charlotte tenses as she waits for Lizzie's answer.
It was a gift.
You see, Charlotte? You cut off her hand for nothing. Lizzie, if you would.
Lizzie goes to the bar and takes a crystal tumbler and fills it with whiskey.
Well, you must remember our little rituals, the drinks, the formality. Consequences. Well, but you were just a child then. Those things really have not changed. Well, actually, there is one thing that has changed. If you achieve the perfection, which is what's expected of you this evening, well then, you can go. I'm a taskmaster, yes, but not a monster.
He smiles across to Paloma, who purses her rosebud lips.
But if you should make a mistake, even miss one minor note, well, it won't be you who pays the price. Paloma, if you would.
Paloma goes to the blue curtain.
We're ready for you, sweetheart. Come.
Ah, Zhang Li, you are a very lucky girl. Come, come, come. Sit. To be able to witness this private concert. You are so, so lucky.
Thank you so much.
No. Okay, Charlotte. It's time for you to play.
I can't.
If you can't, you know what will happen.
He touches the back of Zhang Li's chair.
She just got here. She's a child. Do it to me. If you have to do it to me. Please, don't do it to her. Anton, please, I'm begging you.
Stop!
Do it to me.
Play for us, Charlotte. We're gathered to hear you play. Now do it.
The light brightens on Charlotte's face.
Play the perfection.
Anton touches Zhang Li's bare shoulders, and she flinches.
Play.
Taya's eyes peer at Charlotte through his large wire-rimmed specs. Lizzie, standing by the bar, watches with sullen anticipation. Paloma coolly reaches for a glass. Charlotte exhales and reaches down and picks up a cello, resting it against her red satin dress, her painted lips tightly pursed.
Thank you.
Anton seems mesmerized by her playing. Lizzie listens brutally. Zhang Li, in a pretty pale pink dress, contrasting with her straight black hair, smiles softly, her head swaying to the music. Charlotte's eyes stare with loathing at Anton as she plays. Paloma's breath quickens, her blood-red lips part as she glances across at Anton as he grips Zhang Li's shoulders. Charlotte lowers her bow arm. Lizzie shoots a look at Anton. Zhang Li applauds. Charlotte's firm look of hatred wavers. A flashback to his nakedness.
You know what happens now.
He shakes his head as if pained by the thought.
Paloma, would you be so kind as to bring Zhang Li upstairs? It's past her bedtime.
Paloma stands up, Anton lets go of Zhang Li's shoulders, and Charlotte breathes a sigh of relief.
Thank you. It was wonderful.
Anton watches her leave, then turns to Teyas and Jeffrey.
Did you really think I was gonna make her pay for your mistake? She needs her years of training. She needs to be invited to perform for us as a vessel of God. She needs her tattoo. I'm not some random pervert. I'm just having a little fun.
You motherfucker.
He turns to go.
Theus, Jeffrey, come get me when she stops biting.
Lizzie and Charlotte exchange a loaded look. Teyas drains his whiskey. Jeffrey does the same. Charlotte winces. The facade of the Barkov Academy and its snow-covered grounds. Teyas saunters toward the platform where Charlotte is manacled, pulls a lever, her seat tips up. Jeffrey removes his tuxedo, Teyas downs his whiskey.
Wait. I want her first.
Lizzie comes up with a whiskey in her hand.
It's the least I deserve.
She hands Teyas his glass.
No. Get out of here! Usually I like to use my fingers, but... That's not the question now, don't you think?
Jeffrey smirks as he drains his glass.
Spread her legs.
Don't touch me!
Smirking, the two men finish their drinks, set them on the edge of the stage, and kneel on either side of Charlotte, lifting her skirts.
This won't hurt as bad as cutting your own hand off, but I'll do my best to come close.
Lizzie removes the bandage from the stump.
I hope your cunt can handle it.
And rams it into Charlotte's vagina. Teyas, watching eagerly, suddenly winces. Jeffrey's eyes roll. Teyas gags. Jeffrey sways and falls to his knees. Teyas on his front, his legs shuddering. Jeffrey on his back, clasps his side, his eyes wide open. The two women watch as they stop moving altogether, and Charlotte looks into Lizzie's face with a smile. Lizzie kisses her on the mouth. The scene rewinds. Back to Charlotte about to chop a tomato in her home in Wisconsin. Inside, Lizzie zaps her with her taser. Kicking Charlotte in the stomach, she places her foot on Charlotte's mouth and presses down. She smiles down bitterly.
I should fucking kill you.
She removes her boot from Charlotte's mouth. She lowers her sorrowful eyes.
She were right.
She leans against a wall and sinks to the floor with a deep, exhausted sigh. Charlotte raises herself, leaning back on her elbows.
What you said on the side of the road. You were right.
Flashback to the side of the road where Lizzie lies in agony against the rock where her hand sits next to the meat cleaver.
I had to save you. I had to get you out of his grasp. I knew you were in deep, as deep as I once was, and I knew you weren't gonna leave without a fight.
I can't believe this is happening.
I knew you were one of his special students.
Lizzie can't believe what she is hearing.
What? You don't know anything.
I do. That's why I had to save you.
Stop saying that! You didn't save me. You didn't save me from anything. You made me chop off my own hand.
If you were going to escape willingly, then I had to come up with a true reason that he would never need to see you again. That he would never need you again. Because just know, Lizzie, he never loved you. He never loved me. He never gave a shit about any of us. They tortured us and pretended it was an education, pretended it was some kind of higher calling. But it was just rape. Lizzie, they raped me, and they raped you, and the next time you need Anton most, he will not be there for you. I promise you that, but I will be. I will be there. I promise.
In Wisconsin.
I'm so sorry. I keep seeing him. All of them abusing me for years, years over and over. Like I never saw it before. Like I was blind. It took this happening for me to fucking see it. I have to stop Anton. We have to stop all of them.
Charlotte nods in agreement.
I need your help. Anything.
Four, duet. A needle is placed onto a long playing record. A round-backed chair stands on the performance space in the chapel. Behind it are three brightly lit yellow oval shapes. On the oval platform, Teyas and Jeffrey lie where they collapsed, Teyas on his back, Jeffrey on his front. The room around them is almost dark. The two paintings on the facing walls are barely visible. Anton sits on a sofa, pensively sipping a hot drink. He takes a sip, then leans back, shutting his eyes as he listens to the music. Paloma appears at the door.
Anton.
Is the child asleep?
Paloma sways slightly.
Paloma.
He turns around to look at her and her hand drops from the door jamb. He stands up and moves towards her.
Are you okay?
Her deep-set eyes gaze at him as she sways unsteadily.
Paloma?
Urine splashes between her legs onto the polished wood floor. As he registers the change in the soundtrack, Lizzie, in a gray hoodie, appears next to Paloma and stares at him coldly. Charlotte appears, her arms folded, her expression sardonic.
What's going on?
Lizzie pokes Paloma with her forefinger and she falls forward, a knife in her back.
Paloma!
She was so drugged, she didn't even know we stabbed her.
As Anton seethes, Lizzie produces a meat cleaver.
And we barricaded all the doors, so we can make as much noise as we want.
Anton stares at Charlotte's sardonic face. He points his finger at her and looks imploringly at Lizzie.
You know what she did to you. She ruined you.
No, she opened my eyes. Now, we're gonna fucking chop your balls off and sell them as trinkets.
Charlotte slowly pulls off her wig, revealing a puckish regrowth, and in flashback, she is shaved and given electroshock treatment. She eyes Anton's bewildered face with faint amusement.
Look, I'm sick. Obviously, I'm sick. And I can get help. I'm sick!
Now.
Blood spatters across Charlotte's face as Lizzie wields the cleaver.
You fucking bitch!
As she watches the butchering, her younger self runs through the grounds of the academy. Gritting her teeth, Charlotte slashes with a knife. Anton grabs her by the neck. The room spins and she slumps against a wall. Images flashing across her eyes and distorting.
You pay the price. You pay. You pay the price.
Charlotte.
You pay the price. You pay the price.
Charlotte.
You pay the price. You pay the price.
Charlotte looks up. Anton is crawling towards the knife.
Charlotte, the knife!
She snatches it up and seizes Anton's chin. He throws her off, grabs the knife, and goes to stab her. As she raises her arm in defense, he hacks at her wrist. Behind him, Lizzie embeds the cleaver into his shoulder. Lizzie stands over him with a poker in her hand.
This is for what you did to me. And for what you did to Charlotte. And this is for every other girl who trusted your sick, sorry ass!
Her face spattered with blood, chest rising and falling, Charlotte looks unflinchingly at the butchered body, then raises her eyes to Lizzie with a look of relief. In flashback and in slow motion, her 10-year-old self runs past a green hedge in the grounds of the academy, her long brown hair bouncing. Slowly, she turns to look behind her with a genuine smile. The picture blanks out. In the chapel, the stage is lit, pale yellow and gold. A cello is set on the stage next to a chair. The back view of Anton attached to a drip and seated in a chair facing the stage. Charlotte, in a long black gown, steps up to the stage from the left side. Lizzie, in a white dress, from the right. To face Anton, who is seated in his blue armchair in white underpants, the bloodied stumps of his arms butchered at the elbow swaying slightly, his legs cut off above the knee, his eyes half shut. On the stage, Charlotte, with the cello between her legs, moves the bow across the strings, Lizzie plucking the fingerboard. Two heads, two arms, one instrument, two pairs of staring eyes. As they play, the view of them defocuses as Anton's head comes into sharp focus. Pixie-haired Charlotte and pink-lipped Lizzie play with gusto and serenity. They finish the piece. The words, "the perfection," appear, and the second E inverts. The picture cuts to black, followed by the credits. Directed by Richard Shepard. Written by Richard Shepard, Eric Carmelo, Nicole Snyder. Produced by Bill Block, PGA, Stacey Rice, PGA, Richard Shepard, PGA, Executive Producer Matthew J. Anderson. Co-producer Daniel Clark. Director of Photography, Vanya Chernul ASC. Production Designer, John Marchinyuk. Edited by David Dean. Costume Designer, Beverly Huyn. Music by Paul Haslinger. Music Supervisor, Liza Richardson. Allison Williams. Logan Browning. Steven Weber. Elena Huffman. Casting by Jennifer Houston, CSA. A film by Richard Shepard. The cast, Charlotte's mother was played by Marie Maskell. Charlotte, Allison Williams. Aunts, Christina Jastrzemska. Glynis Davis. Young Charlotte, Molly Grace. Young Lizzie, Mila Thompson. Anton, Steven Weber. Paloma, Elena Huffman. Lizzie, Logan Browning. Teus, Mark Canborg. Jeffrey, Graham Duffy. Zhang Li, Eileen Tian. Party Cellist Girls, Tasman Carlo Yuye, Joya Yi, Ming Zhu, Winnie Hung. Party Cellist's Father, Benjamin Wong. Party Cellist's Mother, Alex Lee. Man at Party, Vince Tang. Man's Wife, Sharon Crandall. Guests at Party, Richard Yi, Grace Wang, Doralyn Mui. Little Girl on Bus, Sophie Chen. Lee Jun, Johnny G. Bus Driver, David Su. Young Lady on Bus, Leon Wang. Elderly Woman on Bus, Lillian Lim. Older Man Bus Passenger, Stephen M.D. Chang. Male Bus Passengers, Larry Zhu, Lee Chi K. Ricky. Mother on Bus, Evelyn Chu. The audio description was written by Veronica Hicks and recorded by Cherise Silvestri for BTI Studios, London.
Red Letter N unfolds into a spectrum of colors.